6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information. 6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Welcome to the 40K Lorecast.
Welcome to 40K Lorecast with me, John Barsotti, and Brad Chester.
This guy.
On today's cast, we'll be continuing our coverage of the Harlequins with a focus on how they're used to shape the lore of the 40K universe.
Which is pretty cool.
Yeah. Before we begin, 40K Lorecast is a weekly podcast devoted to the lore of Warhammer 40K universe, releasing every Monday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. As always, please follow and comment on the cast. Tens of thousands of you have already, and I cannot thank you enough for that. Our ranking in Spotify in reviews still blows my mind, because I don't think we're 4.9 good.
I know. Yeah. I think we're 5.1 good.
Yeah, 4.0. I don't. I think we're solid. Look, I'm aware we're a B. All right. This is not an A+ podcast.
A plus for effort.
Yeah. You know what they don't actually give A pluses for?
Effort. I will definitely get an A+ in participation award.
Exactly. Ugh. Anyway, so for those of you who've done it, I mean, this little art project of ours has turned into something much bigger than anything. And it's only because all of you helped us get there. You helped by writing reviews, liking it, word of mouth. We've spread to all reaches of the earth, and it really does mean a lot to us. So genuinely, thank you. Additionally, in the about for the show, you'll see links to our website, the40klorecast.com, our Discord, and our Patreon. 40klorecast.com is what we're using to have links to all of our platforms, our sponsors, merchandise, coaching, and more. If you want to give it a look, go ahead. It's there. It'd be great. We also always promote our Discord, and today is no exception. We take a massive amount of pride in our Discord because it's become exactly what we want in an online community. Thousands of active members interacting about the 40K universe in a fun and positive way, not trying to one-up each other of who knows more, or flaying people for liking something that they don't, or even just, hey, I don't know much about this, and I ask a question and being told they're an idiot. Yeah, not in our Discord. So it's really incredible. And it's not just on specifically the lore cast itself. It's also on hobbying, gameplay. There's stuff in there. People post pictures of food,
video
their
games,
pets,
everything.
Yeah, video games.
Memes, my favorite channel.
Yeah, memes are in there. Chat.
We also know what my favorite channel
is. Your real favorite channel is people praising Brad. Is may get hijacked by me at some point, as I did, and I'm bringing Alan. I'm going to round up the posse, and we're all going to just dive in there and just.
I do like the fact that the one trait that all of my closest friends have is their joy of making fun of me.
Yeah.
What does that even say
just
about
understand,
me?
At some point, it's possible there may become a new channel under the legend of Brad called The Reality of Brad. it's just all a collection of photos of Brad not doing great. Anyway, on that note, as always, special thank you to Kevin, Nick, Maisie, Brian, Ethan, Steve, Ryan, Trevor, and David for moderating the Discord. As I said last week, and I'll say again, I would burn this thing to the ground if you weren't here. Like, just nope. Yeah, my Discord is not becoming 4chan. Goodbye.
Oh, God.
Just candidly, nope.
I would burn that thing.
When I said burn to the ground, by the way, I don't mean just delete it. I mean, I would find whatever server it was stored on and go in there with a lighter and actually literally burn the server. Probably get arrested for that. And it's probably also in some random country, but that's fine. It's not important. The details aren't
good. Get a Jan Silent Bob it.
Yeah. It's such a movie's not even that good, but the end is hilarious. All right. Lastly, if you go to our website, you can learn more about Brad's coaching services with decades of experience, both in playing and coaching. Well, not decades of coaching, but decade plus. But most importantly, with winning the game, Brad is a quintessential resource for people who are trying to get better at the game. I bring up the winning thing because at the end of the day with coaching, you're getting coached to be better at the game. Brad is a perennial winner in 40K, and he's not the smartest person I've met by a long stretch of any imagination.
Hurtful talk.
So this is not like...
Oh, really?
Yeah. Well, I'm just saying you're not some savant of 40K. You actually do know how the game's played. Like, it's not this piece of like, yeah, I just walk up to the tabletop and then just everything goes black and then I win.
Like, I love the fact that you're like, he's an idiot. He can show you how to win if you're not an idiot.
Yeah. Just saying, like, it's not like, it's the game is complicated. Don't get me wrong, but if this guy can master it,
anybody,
yeah, you should probably ask him how.
Thanks. That's a plus for me.
Put that on your website.
Jesus. That guy's a moron.
Yeah.
He can clearly show you how to do
this. He clearly show you how to do this. Don't worry. Captain Dum Dum can show everyone else how to be good at Dum Dum games.
Captain Dum Dum and the wine.
Good times. So if you want to know more about that, you can go to 40klorecast.com or our Discord and you can reach out to Brad directly. So with that, onto the cast. Last cast, we finished up talking about the Harlequins, what is a Harlequin and how they function. Now we're going to spend today talking about the role the Harlequins play within the lore of 40K. And the cool thing, we'll start with something called the Black Library.
Well,
what?
I'm setting this up.
All right, we're setting this up.
The Black Library is such a big deal. For one, the Black Library is the name that GW gives to all of their books that they
which
sell.
Is actually an example of a failure of Lord of Tabletop, because I've read the Black Library books. They're not as interesting as the Black Library.
But I'm saying
just gonna go ahead and throw there.
The Black Library is
the
important.
Black Library in the game is the eternal repository of all knowledge the Eldar accumulated over 60 million years. It's also
but I'm saying
got a novel.
It's important enough to say that this is what they consider every book that they put out is under the Black Library.
Yeah, no, it's actually a really cool idea.
It's not like this is this random obscure fact.
Yeah.
Nope, this is a big deal.
And let's talk about the Black Library. So as we were saying, so Eldar were the most dominant race in the galaxy for 60 plus million years. And so along the way, they kind of learn a lot of stuff and they find some cool stuff. And if you were British or written by the British, what would you do with any and all knowledge and artifacts that you find in your comings and goings of the world? Simple. You take every single one of them and claim them as your own. And that because you don't want the other people to harm the artifacts or harm themselves with the knowledge of the artifacts.
You keep them away.
Yeah, you got to keep them away. We're going to hold these here in our British Museum because we don't want you guys doing bad things with it.
And then you can just taunt Aramon with it.
Yeah. I will say the British Museum is an awesome place, though. Like, is it all stolen? Yeah, but it's also really convenient to go to one place and see everything.
One tiny island took stuff from all over the world.
Yeah. The Louvre is still one of my favorites. So you go to the Louvre and Hammurabi's code is there. And I'm like,
I don't think that was here.
Yeah, it's just that piece of, like, also, you guys were never there. Like, how did you get this is what I'm getting at. Like,
clearly they were.
Well, but it's a piece of, like, it's not. At least the British Museum comes from British colonies, mostly. Hammurabi's code. France was never in the Fertile Crescent. They just bought it on eBay? I don't know.
I'm going to start a line. What do you think about the big glass thing in front of the Louvre? Tell me in the comments.
You mean the glass pyramid on top of the Louvre? Mm-hmm. It's not in front of it. It's on top of it.
It's kind of. It's right when you go. You have to go the stairs and then you're up.
Yeah, but it's above. Well, I mean, actually, the Louvre is the whole thing. But yeah, I see your point.
Yeah.
It's pretty. Who cares? It's France.
Yeah, I would say I've been there.
It's pretty. Like, it's, right, like, there. It's France. Paris is pretty. It, like or hate the French, I don't care. Paris is really pretty. The food's good. So whatever. Anyway, so in the last cast, we talked about how the Harlequins function. But now we're talking more about how they're moving the plot along. And namely, it's because just when things look their bleakest, GW loves to do, something will then change everything for the better. And a lot of these changes in the most recent portion of the GW plot arc have been Harlequins because of the Black Library. And what makes the Black Library so important is the size of it is so astronomic. And it's not just a collection. When we refer to the Black Library, it's not a library. It's a collection of everything. Artifacts, knowledge, even things that people in the Black Library don't know what they are.
Think about the when we say artifacts, we don't just mean like relics of old. We mean powerful items.
Well, a couple things in the Black Library, for example, is a literal account of the birth of each of the Chaos Gods, how they were formed, when they were formed. Also, you know, what runes were present, what powers were present. Where this becomes more important is also technically includes knowledge of how to end them.
And they also track the waxing and waning of their power.
Yeah.
They know that certain things make them more powerful.
Yeah. And this is where it's interesting. So in the Black Library, the knowledge does exist of how to kill a Chaos God. But the same knowledge to kill the Chaos God is the knowledge to create a Chaos God. And this is the conundrum of the Black Library, because all the information of the Black Library is just that. It's just information. So what actions you do with it can change the course of the galaxy. And we talked about Kegarak. This is his thing. He follows. He's just there for fate. And he, under his watchful eye, whatever you want to call it, is the power to actually end or save the galaxy. But it's the same book. So depending on who gets access to it determines everything.
And he's kind of okay with either. So
yeah. Some other fun ones in the Black Library, by the way, we should mention that, is the actual origins of the Emperor of Mankind, when he was born and every action he took mostly was inaction. Yeah. Detailed breakdowns of the war in heaven.
Which is a big deal.
Yeah, this is the big one, because they actually, like, in the Black Library is what happened to the old ones. The books of Magnus and Lorgar, not copies, the original.
Now, these are cool stories, too, because they stole both of these.
Yeah, from Magnus.
Right in front of them,
yeah, too. Yeah, Magnus and Lorgar finished writing the book in pen, and then some Harlequin went, peace out, bye, got this. Yeah.
They're like, what the hell just happened?
What was that little thing that just took give me my book back.
All they do is the sling ring.
Yeah.
Just grabbed
it. Yeah.
What?
Why? They also do know what happened with the Quark. Yeah. There is evidence of how the orcs became what they are today. So the Harlequins and Kegarak are the protectors of the library and its knowledge. And this is one of the main reasons when the Harlequins appear and begin their plays, everyone listens. They know that the Harlequins are speaking absolute truth. I mean, it may not always come true, but if they're saying, even if the Harlequins are saying, hey, this is a future, it means that as of right now, this is the future. Could be changed, but you have to make changes to make it happen. The problem, though, is that not all that know of the existence of the Black Library seek its knowledge for the benefit of the galaxy.
Off Airmen.
Yeah, because innumerable humans have tried to come in just to get a fraction of the knowledge and have been repelled. But the bigger threat that's come up more recently has been Tzeentch and Slaanesh. Korn doesn't care.
At all.
And now just Nurgle, by the way. Both of them are like, whatever.
Let's go to one thing on that. Because one of the biggest things is they also have a host of true names.
That's true. They can banish a demon instantly by just uttering its true name, and they've got all of them.
Yeah.
But
there's a serious list, which would be gigantic for... Yeah.
What's interesting to me is the two gods who care, Slaanesh and Tzeentch. Slaanesh, really, it's not that she doesn't care that much about the library.
Find it. She just wants to put a grenade.
Yeah, she's like kill anything and everything in it because she has an endless thirst for the souls of the Eldar. And there's also an Eldar god hanging out there. So let's just say she would like to get access to the Black Library, but the real one are Tzeentch and Aramon, who ironically are actually diametrically opposed in their desire, but perfectly aligned on the mission. Tzeentch wants to gain access to the Black Library because it actually contains information that Tzeentch doesn't want to get out, namely how to defeat Chaos, Tzeentch's weaknesses, and Tzeentch's plans.
And things that have worked against it.
Yeah. Aramon, on the other hand, wants access to the Black Library for those exact reasons, to use them against Tzeentch. Because as we cover in the Aramon cast, Aramon hates Tzeentch.
Oh, yeah.
Hates Tzeentch and wants to destroy Tzeentch. Replace Tzeentch with himself, but wants to destroy Tzeentch. The good news is for the galaxy, the Black Library is impenetrable.
Yeah. We have to throw it out there. I can never say Black Library without talking about some of the Roadrunner Coyote shit that the...
That they do
the Harlequins have done to Aramon.
it's just brutal. It's like, oh, hey, the door is right here. You can go right through. And he opens the door and falls out of the webway. That's what he does. That is what they do. They say, here's a door into the Black Library. And Aramon runs over, throws open the door, steps into the Black Library, and finds himself on the moon. And the door closes behind it with a, you know, F you. And then the door behind him shuts. Like, that's, yeah. Try again. Should we make the reference to it? Bum, bum, ba, bum. Yeah. But that's just an American thing. So let's talk about why the Black Library is so hard to get to. First off, it's completely inside the webway, but not like Camara, where it's a large structure with multiple like access ports in and out. The Black Library is in a hidden pocket of a hidden pocket of a hidden pocket in the webway. There is no access. The only way to the Black Library is a Harlequin has to basically grab you by the scruff of the neck and drag you the whole way there. There is no map. It's impossible.
Well, let's go into the thing about that also. Even if you get a Harlequin to drag you by the scruff of the neck, the webway has to agree that they want you there.
And not only the webway, because the Black Library is in the webway, it's kind of alive.
It has
the Black Library, it will attack. So you're having to fight the Harlequins and the space that you're standing in, which is not a real space. Yeah.
It would just close down sections of the webway. Yeah. Go, no, thank you.
Yeah, effectively, like, even the normal webway, if a non-Eldar enters it, it's almost like the webway treats like a bacteria, just starts attacking it. And the webway begins to, it'll warp and distort and basically try to expel the intruders on its own. The Black Library is one that takes that a bit further, and it's let's just say you're not getting in without...
The Black Library has also put people in their own pocket dimension.
Yeah.
So figure that out.
Yeah, good luck. Like, where am I? No, nothing knows.
Nowhere.
Yeah. The interesting thing in the Black Library, though, is it does occasionally allow people to have access to it. And it's a very small fraction of information is granted, and... It's a very, when I say fraction, I mean like they get to read one sentence of one book, but that sentence is enough to change the course of history.
Yeah.
And I also should point out that getting access to the Black Library would require going through like every Harlequin and Solitaire that has ever existed and an Eldar god. So basically, unless you are a Chaos god, you're not getting in. Just saying.
It seems hard.
Yeah.
I would say the difficulty level is probably good.
Yeah. But let's talk now about when the Harlequins kind of first moved the story along with their arrival in the galaxy. This is actually a while ago. So the Harlequins were known only to the Eldar. No one in the rest of the galaxy had any knowledge of their existence. And prior to the fall, the Eldar were the most powerful race in the galaxy. So they had no need for allies.
And for a while, before the fall, before we led into the death cults and all that, mm-hmm. for millions of years, Eldar were wild, air quotes,
yeah.
the good guys, if you were another Eldar. Eldar didn't really have any fighting amongst other Eldar.
No.
They were shitty to not Eldar,
though. Well, and that's why, and so no one has any record. I mean, the truth, like all the records humanity has of the Eldar have been told to them by the Eldar yeah. post-fall. Because what happens is the Eldar met humanity and went, well, you guys are going to make this all a lot worse. So let's give you a bunch of information of stuff not to do. And then humanity correctly called them out on, didn't you do every single one of these things you're telling us not to do?
Raise your hand if you created a dark god.
Yeah.
All right, fine.
You're fine. We did that, but no more talking, Eldar. So what happens, what's interesting to me is that after the fall, the Eldar split into fragments, and they're not even aware of who and what survived. Because as we said, like 90%+ of the Eldar were consumed by Slaanesh along with almost all of their gods.
And it was instant.
Yeah.
I want to make sure everybody realizes this in the fall. This wasn't like Slaanesh hunted down. No.
Yeah.
Slaanesh broke the sky in its birth and killed 90% of the Eldar race, which was trillions of Eldar.
And so post-fall, the Eldar are trying to figure out who's alive, who's not. The craft worlds began making contact with each other, obviously. They were aware the Drukhari, because the Drukhari at this point still hadn't come out of the webway. The Drukhari were in Gamora. Suddenly an M33 around, so this is about 3,000 years after the fall, the Ulthway were under attack by Slaanesh demons. They had been on some planet doing something, who cares? And a bunch of Slaanesh demons just appeared and began attacking. Instantly, out of a webway portal, a horde of Harlequins burst out, kill all the demons, and then they dropped their calling card.
Induced out.
This is the first time the Harlequins. So this was massive because for the Eldar, they now know the Harlequins are alive, which then begins the question,
they didn't know.
Well, and this also means, is Kegarak alive?
Yeah.
Because, we're 3,000 years post. They're aware all their gods are dead. I mean, not all of them, it turns out.
But in Eldar, I've been doing full, at this point in time, survival mode.
Yeah.
Not even just planning mode. Figure it out. Who the hell is even left?
Yeah. This is this is a massive change for the Eldar, because now they know some of us did survive. They can't contact the Harlequins, but they begin the process of trying to, namely Eldred. A couple thousand years later, the same thing happens in the Dark City. Asdrubal Vect gets a visit from the Veiled Path, the Harlequins. An alliance is made. No one knows the terms, but after which the Harlequins became a common sight in the Dark City.
Again, hands off.
Mm-hmm, exactly, but at the same time, Asdrubal Vect's power began to grow pretty massively within the city.
Exponentially, yes.
Another key one, though, was actually an Exodite world. And we don't get to play Exodites in the game because we can't have fun things.
Playing them for Adepticon.
Yep. So the very edge of the galaxy, there's an Eldar Exodite were being persecuted, basically, by a Chaos Warband devoted to Nurgle. Out of nowhere, the skies opened and Harlequins with Drukhari witch cult came out.
And this is
no
one had
ever seen this.
Right. Yeah. No one had ever seen this, but also it's the full witch cult.
Yeah.
Which is a huge deal.
Yeah. Exactly. And so they fought together, defeated the chaos forces, and returned back. So not a raid. Normally when witch cult arrived, the witch cult came and fought, took no slaves.
And left, yeah.
It did no pain from suffering, nothing Drukhari related. They just saved an Eldar Exodite world. This is massive, and it starts happening all around the galaxy. Not commonly, but occasionally, where the Harlequins are showing up with Drukhari, with Eldar, and everyone begins trying to figure out what their motivation is. And the truth is that their focus is to return the galaxy and from destruction. I will say one funny note on them is AdMech. So
they're not big fans.
AdMech and Harlequins don't get along very well. Any of you who played Space Marine 2 know the AdMech have a tendency to play with artifacts and open and play with any artifact they find, no matter how heretical it might be or how many warning runes were placed on it in every language possible. The AdMech will still go, yeah, but I'm just going to open this anyway. So a pretty common story throughout Harlequin history is a group of Imperial forces are excavating some ancient site when they're just suddenly attacked by Harlequin forces, kills them down to a man. And it's done to prevent the Imperial forces from just unleashing like a new chaos god, basically.
But let's talk about this for just a second. On a side note, why are there... it's not even Pandora's boxes. It's Pandora's boxes XL plus.
Yeah, it is.
Family size.
This element... Yeah, the question is, so the Harlequins are aware of where every Pandora's box is in the galaxy. And at no point has anyone said, we should pick those things up and destroy them.
Yeah, or just take them in the Black Library. Yeah,
just put them somewhere else.
They're always just sitting there on a rock with like a message that says, don't open.
Yeah.
And you're like, but it's right there. I'm going to open it.
Yeah, don't open this. I mean, to be fair, to defend the Eldar there, the Eldar, if it says, don't open it, the Eldar go, yeah, okay, we shouldn't open that.
It's just, I mean, that is true.
Yeah, just, the Eldar are like, yeah, that makes sense. They wrote, don't open this. And
however, humans
I'm going to go ahead like, and not open it.
I'm going to touch it with a stick.
Yeah, what if I poke it? I got an idea. What if we open it really quickly? That then it won't be dangerous, right?
It happens a lot.
Yeah.
And they're always terrible.
They're all of these. You know, although, fine, you know where there are never any of those Pandora's boxes? Tau Worlds. Because you know why? Because there's nothing of value in that part of the galaxy.
Still had to go Tau. Coming off the top ring rope.
We'll be right back after a quick break.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
What's fun about them, though, is that no one also knows the motivation behind a Harlequin interaction until much later. So the Harlequins might appear suddenly between the forces of chaos and another foe. They'll help the other foe defeat the forces of chaos and then kill that foe. Routinely. And it's because the Harlequins are trying to push forward some sort of narrative in these things. And always kill chaos first, but also make sure that the narrative gets moved forward.
And a lot of times all they want to do is kill a potential great leader of chaos.
And this is because in my mind, the Harlequins are focused on, you know, moving the path forward of the galaxy to success. And usually they don't need to do massive amounts of damage to do that. They don't have to go and wipe out like an entire system. They just have to wipe out the 100 people who are going to upend that system.
They also do other things too, because there's also stories where they attack an Imperial outpost just so the Imperium fortifies the position that Chaos is going to attack later on.
Well, actually, I'll give you a really good one. This is one I liked a lot. I think this is 9th edition Codex. So the Hive fleet was threatening an Imperial, just an Agri world. So it's not a large Hive fleet, it's a small Hive fleet. For no reason, the Harlequins appear in force and destroy. I mean, it's actually a really cool battle. They go through and they kill off all the commanders in the Hive fleet. So all the Hive tyrants, they kill them first, which then effectively turns off the synapse, and then they just mop up the rest of them. And then as they're leaving the planet, they take a little detour and blow up all the terraformers on the planet, turning the Agri world into a death world. At this point, the Hive fleet leaves because there's no value. The biosphere is collapsing, so there's nothing for them to eat there. And all the people there die. But the reason they did that was because one of the key webway gates of in the area was there, and the Eldar didn't want the Tyranids present on one of their webway gates.
It's going to be a bummer if you're an Imperial citizen, though. You're like, We're saved.
This is like, as yeah, blowing up a terraformer apparently does, it's not a quick process for the planet to fall apart. That's kind of what I took from that one. Other times, though, their motivations are a lot less clear. This one's funny. So the Harlequins, for no apparent reason, attacked an Imperial defense force. And just all they did was, they didn't even fight the world. They just blew up all the defenses and left. And then a Necron Dynasty fleet arrives in orbit like 2 weeks later. No one knows why. Because apparently, in order to help the galaxy, the Necrons had to conquer that world.
Well, the big thing is that sometimes they're just alerting.
Yep.
So like, hey, we know if we chash this, that you'll start fortifying this.
Yeah. Or the Necrons will do a better job of fighting off what's coming than you will.
To be fair,
they're not wrong.
Necrons are just better at fighting chaos. Pylons, everything else. They thought they could just close the rift with tech.
We'll just close it. Like, chaos keeps coming. All right, I'll put this big black pyramid up.
And then they'll just go away. They just put the bug zapper light on.
Yeah, exactly. Just problem solved. The way down on the Harlequins, though, as far as moving the lore, is I like to use it as like putting a rock in a river. And, you know, if I go to a river and I drop a rock in the river, it doesn't appear to do much. But as I keep adding more rocks and more rocks and more rocks, I will eventually divert the flow just a little bit. And over time, by diverting that flow, a small amount is catastrophic. You can change entire landscape with that. And that's what takes us into Harlequins in the 41st millennia. So one thing they've done a really bad job of, and I'm sorry, is discussing what chaos has been doing over the last 10,000 years. No, mostly how much it's grown. So at the time of the Great Crusade, the gods of chaos were all powerful beings, but it was a fraction of the power that they have now. The events of the Horus Heresy was an incredible boon to their power. So it's about 2.5 trillion dead. And by the way, that's what GW says. It's way more than that. When you actually do the math of like, well, there's planets with 1 trillion people on it.
Yeah, we're fighting over millions of worlds.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I think the Necromunda world might have 1 trillion people on it. It's a lot more than that. This blew up Nurgle and Khorne. So all that death, they start doing well. But then the recovery of the Horus Heresy is a massive boost for Tzeentch and Slaanesh, because Slaanesh had the Emperor's Children, don't forget, which were the largest and most powerful legion of the time. So she's getting powered up as they're just doing their stuff. And then Tzeentch is just able to, by the way, the whole galaxy sucks. How would you like to have impossible knowledge or information or any of those things?
Or just be lifted outside of your terrible, terrible existence.
And that was just the Horus Heresy. So over the next 10,000 years, you've got Abaddon's Crusade, Destroyer Plagues, Imperial Cults, Hive Cities. The Immaterium has been getting fed for the last 10,000 years with just absolute raw power. And the gods are also just juicing
up. The thing is after the Horus Heresy, we still grew wildly larger in population of humans who are wildly wrecking.
They're really good at feeding chaos.
Yes.
And so one of my biggest complaints of the 40K universe and lore is that there are no good factions. Everyone's bad.
Yes, there were for a little bit.
Yeah.
Your least favorite faction.
But I still think there is, though. And I think it's the Harlequins. It's also probably one of the reasons I like them so much, because everyone else is selfish or mysterious. Like the Tau were almost good, but then they made the Ethereal, the whole thing with the Ethereals. So they're bad. But I'm going to go out on the limb and I say, I think the Harlequins, they're super mysterious, but I think that they're good. I think the Harlequins genuinely are trying to, because their motivation, the Eldar are motivated to save the Eldar race. The Drukhari are motivated to save
the craft worlds now are super cool and honorable if you're Eldar.
Exactly.
The problem is they will do bad shit to you.
But my thing is the Eldar to me, and we'll get to the Yanari another time, but the Eldar to me are in it to save the Eldar. Whereas
they want the Eldar to be back, yes.
Don't care if all of the Eldar die, long as chaos is gone.
Correct.
And that's why I think
I'll give you that.
I think the Harlequins are the only good guys in the 40K galaxy and on the tabletop. Bring me back my old rules. They were broken and it sucked to play against them, but they earned it. They're the good guys. So As a timeline has crept closer to M41, the plot of the 40K universe has become more focused on chaos than ever. And this is Tyranid Invasion, Necron Tormoods, Orc Waa. The forces of the living are being like stretched really, really thin. And this opened the door for a greater chaos incursion to the galaxy. And what you saw is, as we got into M41, more and more worlds going dark, not just from like slaughter of the population from invasion, but also rituals from within. Chaos cults are rising up. The chaos gods are powering up.
Well, the Imperium became a shittier and shittier place to live because it was so built on war economy. Yep. But if you're part of the cog, where we talked about, we did the whole cast on Imperial worlds and how much of a nightmare they are. Yeah, man, it's pretty easy to go to chaos and you're like, this is the worst.
At the same time as this was going on, though, on Exodite worlds, Camara, Craft worlds, the numbers of Harlequins being seen and performing started going up exponentially.
Oh, it's crazy.
They just started, because, I mean, we went from seeing a Harlequins, oh, yeah, they're here like once, they're, once every 100 years to like, it's every day.
You're like, you're like, I saw a Harlequin. You're like, cool. I also saw Bigfoot. Cool.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Now it's like, oh, I saw a Harlequin. Yeah, I can too. He's right there.
Yeah. He's got a sheet that says, I'll be here tomorrow at 3.
And the reason behind this is that within the Black Library, there is a tome called the Crystal Tome. It's the most sacred tome in the whole library. It's an ancient book that's bound shut with chains of light. But they wrote, so I'm going
to
read it.
I was just about to say, you're not wrong.
This tome, though, is interesting because it's not ancient knowledge, but future knowledge. So as the events of the galaxy have unfolded, to make the fate of the galaxy more believable, whatever you want to call it, like more concrete, more and more of these chains fall off until finally it happened. And the last chain fell off and the book opened and the custodians of the Black Library were able to read it. And so let's talk about this tome of knowledge. And more importantly, let's talk about, this is so hard to pronounce, Rana Dandra. So as the Crystal Tome opens, it reveals that Rana Dandra is not the only path to ending chaos. Rana Dandra, for those who didn't listen to the Eldar cast or have forgotten it, is an Eldar myth about the future. Rana Dandra is the entirety of the galaxy goes to battle.
It's Ragnarok.
Yeah, with chaos. It's with Ragnarok. And in the end, everyone in the galaxy dies. But in their death, they bring the Immaterium with them and they do a full reset of the galaxy, also known as Age of Sigmar. That's what they did. However, when the Crystal Tome opened, it showed an alternative path. And this path is believed to be written by Kegarak himself, shows that the Eldar actually can triumph over Slaanesh. So the Eldar can rise up and killing one god, they will then move on to the other one. So in this story, Kegarak and Slaanesh will engage in like conflict, not a direct battle, just conflict. Kegarak will trick Slaanesh into expending all of her energies into accidentally saving and restoring the Eldar. So Kegarak doesn't slay Slaanesh. Kegarak has Slaanesh slay herself by accident saving the Eldar.
I didn't even know it was just slaying her specifically, but he was stealing the power of all the Eldar souls back.
Yeah.
Which would
bring the Eldar back to the galaxy.
They don't say whether it just kills Slaanesh, but it's depowers Slaanesh by stealing all her power.
Yeah.
All the stolen souls, which are her power.
And so the Harlequins don't really know how to make these events come to pass, but they understand effectively, like they don't have the full roadmap, but every time an event comes to pass that's on the roadmap, they are aware. So this is what they're now doing. They're now doing all they can to move this process along. So in order to do this, Kegarak will need an Eldar united and more powerful than ever. So we're going to do two stories that are actually out of order, but it'll make sense why in the end, because I don't like how GW wrote it. So just candidly. So around 999 of M41, Gamora is on fire. The Yanari.
This is super, super close to current.
Yeah, this is basically current.
Yeah.
The Yanari are rising within the Dark Realm, and it's created a civil war. Azdrobal Vex's power was being challenged for the first time because this new faction, the Yanari, were gaining recruits. And usually anything that happens, well, usually, always, anything that happens in the Dark Realm is that the approval
it's of the behest Vect. Of Azrael.
If Vect didn't say yes, it doesn't happen. this is not happening. More and more Drukhari are leaving and joining Yavrainer followers. So to stop this, Vect launches a shadow war against Yavrainer followers. That's always worked for him in the past. Vect never does direct conflict. He has other people do his bidding. This way, he can always claim victory, but never has to take responsibility for failure. So really good deal if you can get it, by the way. but it didn't work. Every shadow campaign fails, and actually it leads to more and more recruits going to the Inari. To make matters worse for Vect, the events that led to the rise of Yavrain had created a portal to the Immaterium within the Dark City, creating the first ever demonic invasion in the city. So Vect now has to use his forces. Remember, he's in charge of Gamora. So he has to use his forces to fight the demons of chaos, like the Gate on Terra. Thanks, Magnus. I wonder if he did this one too.
Still Magnus' fault.
But this could not be closed, just like the Gate on Terra. It could not be closed, just contained. So for the first time in 5,000 years, Vect's rule looks weakened. Not weak, but weakened. Out of nowhere, Mandrakes attack Vect specifically and cut him down to pieces. And when I say pieces, remember we said before, the homunculi can take a small piece of a Drukhari and regenerate it back to full. The Mandrakes used their dark energy to make sure that nothing was left of Vect. Even more so, because that's what I love about Vect. Vect over the years had like cut pieces, I think like his fingers off, and spread his fingers and all these little pieces of his body all around into hidden areas all around, just in case someone did kill him and destroy his body. His homunculi could go and pick up one of these pieces and grow him back from like his pinky finger. The Mandrakes found all of those and destroyed them all. So Vect was dead, which I should have said that with a lot more energy, by the way. I realized that. Sorry, guys. But yeah, Vect is dead now. His death and everyone is dead. It's fine. No. Vect, there's a shockwave across the city. Stop going ahead.
He's Azrael Vect, yo.
I know. I mean, this, of course, leads to a full civil war within Gamora because
everybody's been waiting for Dad.
Well, yeah, in the Dark Realm, nature abhors a vacuum, just like a dog. Dogs also abhor vacuums, if you're not aware. I think cats do too. I just don't own a cat. I assume they do. But before the civil war was to begin, the Harlequin, the Mask of the Veiled Path, arrived. And they're going to hold a massive wake for the fallen Archon of Vect. This was meant to honor Vect, as well as set the stage for a new leader to emerge amongst the Drukhari. So they have it, this great arena called the Nexus, and all the Drukhari who can't attend. It's all the nobility. Everyone is there. Because some who were loyal to Vect are kind of sad. Others came just to literally laugh at his death. But I think the vast majority were just there to see, well, who's taking
control. What would happen? What's going to go down?
The performance is moving. And as it reaches its giant crescendo, the air in the entire arena changes. And it's a powerful hallucinogen has been released. At the same time, all of the exits disappear. Not are blocked.
Yeah, I was just going to say.
Disappear.
They're gone.
The doors disappear.
You also couldn't fly away because it was a dome.
It's a dome. And so at this moment, the Harlequins of the Veiled Path explode into the crowd to start slaughtering everyone. Witches of the Cursed Blade and homunculize the Prophets of Flesh. And of course, Warriors of the Cabal, the Black Heart, also appear.
Which is Vex
Cabal. Yeah, Vex Cabal. And just slaughter all of the attendees. As the place is getting just basically filled with blood, a giant column of dark energy rises up from the middle. And on top of that column is Azdrubal Vect.
Just call him Vect.
He's Vect. Yeah, I'll stop even trying.
It's not even getting close.
I
think you're going to be worse each time.
I probably am.
You're going to be like Anthony Vect.
Yeah. Eric the Vect. So anyway, Vect is reincarnated, resurrected. I don't know which one it is. And he reclaims his throne in the Dark City. The Prophets of Flesh then go and pick up all of the dead loyalists to Vect and resurrect all them. And then Vect goes on a revenge tour of the rest of the Dark City, killing anyone and everyone who just so much as smiled at his death.
Yeah, he goes on the, he definitely Kaiser Soze stuff. He's like, I heard you weren't sad that I died.
But what's interesting about this is that Vect no longer refers to himself as Vect. He refers to himself as a dark muse. And a dark muse is an Eldar god for the Drukhari. This is the dark muse. It doesn't really fully fit in Eldar mythology, but it is probably in between a Eldar god and an Eldar like supreme leader.
This is also why he doesn't have a model right now, because of these events.
Well, he's a Primarch. That's the best analogy I can make to him is that at this point he becomes a Primarch.
He's so bananas badass at this point.
Yeah. But what's crazy is that the Harlequins disappear back in the Webway, and no one knows what the deal is with them.
I think that they orchestrated this to get Vect on board with
something.
If we need to unify, if we need your forces to unify, because remember, he wasn't okay with all this stuff going on.
But he's still not okay. I mean, the thing is, close to this, he's still not okay with the unifying.
Yes and no. I mean, it's a big no.
It's a big no.
He kind of just
yes and no. He's actively trying to kill every member of the Inari at this moment in the current
world. For a minute, it didn't look like
there is something. There's some deal he's made with the Harlequins and Kegarak.
I think he has a end times deal.
I could see that.
All right. That is a Brad theory.
Now, as we said before, I'm telling you two stories out of order, and there's a reason I'll do this. So, as we said before, the Harlequins appear all around Eldar civilizations, dark cities, craft worlds, exodites, corsair fleets. And when they're there, they perform their plays, displaying both the history of the Eldar as well as the fates of the future. But randomly, a new play emerges from nowhere. And this new play has a character, the god of death, Yanid. No one knows who this god of death Yanid is, but the Harlequins are talking about it. So time to pay attention. Is she is? And the cool thing about it is, even in the play, they're not clear intentionally. Is Yanid a savior? Is she a liar? Or is she a useless distraction?
I think it's a big deal because who plays Yanid though? This is why it's so
good. Twilight.
Exactly. And Twilight is the journey of what you're supposed to understand and make your decision is played by the Twilight players. So you are supposed to figure out what this means.
Yep. And so the Harlequins are performing these plays in mass all over the Eldar Empire, especially in the craft worlds. And these performances were of such high interest to the Eldar and the craft worlds that drew incredible crowds, basically occupying the entire attention of entire fleets of ships while these events were going on, which is a great distraction for what's going on. Because now we're going to go even further back to M31, when, I don't know how you're born as an Eldar, but little Eldred Ulthron is a little baby Eldar. I don't know what that baby Eldar looks like. This is Brett's favorite person.
I do love it. Eldred's my favorite character by far. It's not even close.
So Eldred ends up being the most powerful psyker in the entire Eldar race. He's in the current 40K lore, maybe the most powerful psyker in the galaxy.
He also, besides Tzeentch, has his hands in the most cookie jars of what has happened in the galaxy.
But what's cool about him is he's kind of like an Indiana Jones.
He's putting on the hat for sure.
Oh, puts on the hat because he's a historian, he's a psyker, and he's just going on little adventures to learn more and more and more
all the time. He's still doing that actually.
Yeah, and Eldred's big thing was once he became a Farseer, his focus was on unraveling the mysteries of the galaxy, primarily helping to save the Eldar from their current path of very slow extinction. At some point, we don't know when during this process, Eldred noticed a very strange sound coming from inside the infinity circuits. It was the deep heartbeat of like that of like a slumbering dragon that was sitting inside of the infinity circuits. And it's unknown if he actually ever went all the way to the Black Library, but it's 100% likely that he went to the Black Library.
They don't completely go there. But he came away with knowledge that's only in the Black Library.
Yeah, knowledge only in the Black Library about how to create a god.
Yep.
And thanks to, A now discontinued Illich Knight spear. Boo, GW.
Pouring one out for both him and Charondras.
Yeah. I mean, Charondras at least was an old model. Knight spear wasn't an old model and looked good. It was well posed. Like, Charondras' model looked like crap. That helmet was done.
25 years old.
Yeah, but Illich's not.
I know.
It might even be plastic. No, I think it was still resin. But still.
Let's not get crazy.
Yeah. Ugh. Anyway, Illich Knight spear takes Eldred to a moon. And the moon is covered in white sand that turns out not to be sand, but actually the remains of millions of dead Eldar.
Yeah.
That
got dusted by the birth of Slaanesh. Yeah,
but not like they've been cremated. It's their psychic entities, because, you know, where Magnus got shattered, Cain got shattered. This is tiny, minuscule shards of the psychic entities of dead Eldar that occurred when Slaanesh was born, because this moon is just on the outside of the Eye of Terror, because everything's just on the outside of the Eye of Terror in 40K lore.
Of course.
So it creates what looks to be a sea of shimmering crystals that are just full of psychic energy. So Eldred knew that this moon could be used as a catalyst to birth a new god. He just had to pump enough energy into it. So back to the Harlequins. Eldred partners with the Mask of the Midnight Sorrow to do something. And the something was this. As the Harlequins were performing these plays in all the craft worlds, Eldred was able to then use the distraction to reach into the Infinity Circuits and link them together.
This is crazy dangerous, by the way. This
is a terrible idea.
Yes. This is, I'm a huge Eldred fan, but this was like, bro, what are you doing?
So Eldred created a link between the Infinity Circuits of craft worlds. These are, again, cross-galaxy craft worlds. And creates a link. This link could allow Slaanesh into the Infinity Circuits.
Which is the only thing keeping all Eldar souls from the delicious dinner table of Slaanesh.
Yeah. Luckily, Eldred, and just like Gilliman, never makes a mistake. He doesn't. It's not my fault Gilliman's always right. Just is. So supported by his Harlequin allies, Eldred begins the ritual on the moon. We cover this in the Eldar cast briefly. It went a little awry. And by a little awry, I mean for some stupid reason, they pissed off a bunch of Death Watch who showed up and blew the whole ritual up. Which
is crazy. These guys just show up and you're like, we're totally helping you, or they're about to.
Yeah, they're about to help, but they also just blew up a planet for no reason. So the ritual ends. Yeah,
there are some bad things that did happen, but yeah, on that.
The ritual gets obviously cut a little bit short by the Death Watch, but it does still wake the God of Death. It just doesn't infuse her with enough power to gain full sentience and power yet. And if you're wondering why we're going to break right there, it's because you don't play Eldar.
Gathering storybooks for the win.
Yeah, we're going to stop right here, because next week we're going to pick up exactly at this point and tell the story of the Yennari.
Oh, you know what the best part about this is? I don't think we've ever had a cliffhanger before.
Yeah, and it's because I haven't started even writing it yet. So I should probably get to that. I don't know if this is going to be one or two casts, candidly, guys, but it will be at least a few casts on the Yennari. We owe people this for a while.
One of us has read this series of books several times.
Yeah, it's very convoluted, this story. It's going to cross over into multiple factions, which is why I think a lot of you will enjoy it a lot, because this is where people talk about Kahl. We'll be able to talk about a lot of these
talk main about characters. Gilliman. You're welcome.
I'll always talk about Gilliman. Gilliman is just going to fit into random stuff. We're gonna do a cast on World Eaters.
Oh, they cast True Resurrection. Thank you very much.
Yeah. So we hope, you know, you guys have enjoyed this Harlequin coverage. Yeah, I mean, they will play a major role in like a lot of the episodes we have coming forward, because anytime we talk about the plot of 40K, we're going to be doing a lot of Harlequin stuff. But we hope you guys enjoyed this cast. And until next week, this has been John Barsotti and Brad Chester.
This guy.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.